is that. But also, my talk will be perhaps have a slightly different flavor from other talks. I think lots of talks have been 3D. So first of all, the dimensionality is different. And secondly, it's like, so I myself do not know quite enough math. So, I perhaps couldn't give this talk at the same level as all the other speakers, like oriented really specifically for mathematicians. I think for people who work in the intersection of math and physics, the best outcome is like someone who is both a physicist and a mathematician. However, for me, I feel like I haven't been evolving the correct way, so I ended up being like someone who is neither a mathematician nor physicist, so which will make it perhaps there's some language issue here during my talk. But whenever you have questions, like either on Zoom, so just unmute yourself if you can, shout out, or if you're here, you can get this microphone, and I'll try my best to translate or try to answer a little bit to help you to understand what I'm trying to say. Okay, so today I will be talking about geometric structures in 4D equals 2 class S series, which is some topic has quite a long history already. So just outlook. So the physical theory are going to be this thing called 4D equals 2 class S series, which I will define momentarily. And I would like to, so can people see the cursor here? Okay. So. And for the mathematical side, I would like to make some connections to, for example, Hitchin systems, skinning theory and linking variants, and exact WKB method for ordinary differential equations. So today's talk will be mostly about building up the definitions or concepts of 4D equals 2 class S series, and also talk a little bit more about the relation to Hitchin systems. And I think I will give another talk perhaps next Monday, if I remember correctly, where I will say more about this relation to skinning theory and linking variants, and also more about this exact WKB method for ordinary differential equations. All right. So let me start from some basic facts of 4D equals 2 series. 4D equals 2 series are four-dimensional supersymmetric quantum field theories with 8 supercharges. So first of all, you could ask, like, how do you write down such a theory? What are the relevant supersymmetric multiplets? So here, you have a vector multiplet, which whose field content I wrote here. So here, each row could be understood as an n equals 1 supersymmetric multiplet. For example, the first row here is an n equals 1 vector multiplet containing a gauge field and a fermion. And the second row here is an n equals 1 Carroll multiplet containing this complex scalar phi and another fermion. And these two fermions form a doublet under the so-called SU2R symmetry. And another supersymmetric multiplet will be relevant, which is hypermultiplet, which is basically two copies of n equals 1 Carroll multiplet, where here Q and Q tilde dega again form a doublet under the SU2R symmetry, and they are scalars. So given these multiplets, you could write down a Lagrangian for, say, a G-gauge theory with matter consisting of vector multiplets in the adjoint representation of gauge group G and hypermultiplet in whatever representation you have under this group G. However, as discovered by many people, many 4D equals 2 theories do not admit a Lagrangian description. Instead, they have some sort of geometric origin. So part of the, today's talk was to sort of explore, I mean, mostly review all the great works to make connections between the 4D equals 2, certain large class of 4D equals 2 series, and some topics concerning this sort of geometric origin. So before I go to this specifying to 4D equals 2 series with geometric origin, I would like to say a little bit more facts about this series. So as with many series with extended supersymmetry, here we would have a continuous modulus space of vacua. And some distinguished branches are, for example, the Coulomb branch, which is characterized by the scalars in the hypermultiplets do not have a VAF. And this Coulomb branch will be what we're going to keep referring back to in this talk and perhaps my next Monday's talk when I talk about different objects in this Fording Coulomb series. And on the other hand, you could also have this thing called Higgs branch, which is the Q and Q tilde will gain life, but the phi inside the vector multiplets will be turned off. And in general, one could have mixed branch. So since we're going to be keep returning to Coulomb branch, let me first say some fact about Coulomb branch. Namely, at a generic point on the Coulomb branch, we have a low energy effective theory, where because it's a generic point, so you expect your gauge group is broken to its Cartan subgroup. So the low energy effective field theory generically is some Fording equals to U1 to some power gauge theory, so some abelian theory. And the effective dynamics is embedded into this so-called Sabre-Witten curve, which I will define momentarily. But before I do that, let me also try to just introduce or remind you the notion of central charge and BPS states. So to define such a thing,
Hi, sorry. Yeah. What are the elements in the multiplets? Like, what are those things?
A, yeah.
Q.
So for example, here you have a viral fermion. This is a gauge field, and then so these two form n equals one vector multiplet, and the arrows could be sort of indicating the action of Q supercharges, and then here on the second row here you would have a complex scalar phi, another fermion. This is These are field content for n equals one chiral multiplet. And then you could ask, like, how does this n equals two supersymmetry come from? Because there's actual, I didn't talk more about it, but there's actual SU2R symmetry relating these two fermions. And then the whole thing gives you a Fording equals two vector multiplet. Is that good? OK. All right. So central charges and BPS states. To define such a thing, we could look at this one particle Hilbert space of the theory on R3. And moreover, we're going to fix the boundary values of your fields at infinity to correspond to a point on the Coulomb branch. After you do that, as we said, that at a generic point on the Coulomb branch, the low energy effective theory is some abelian theory. So this Hilbert space will be admits a decomposition according to the electromagnetic and flavor charges in the infrared effective theory, so which I denote as gamma. Once you choose an explicit charge basis, you could write down this charge gamma quite explicitly, so it has some electric charge, magnetic charge, and potentially flavor charge. And within each sector, there is a certain bound for what's the possible lowest energy of the states within each sector. And that's the so-called BPS bound. And this bound is given by the absolute value of the quantity called central charge, which is a protective quantity. And the central charge, you could write it using these infrared charges as, for example, electric charge times this thing called electric period, plus magnetic charge times the magnetic period or dual period, plus some potential flavor charge times the mass parameter. So you could ask, like, why? So I introduced this quantity because later they will play some role in this geometric picture. But physically, you could understand this kind of states which saturate this so-called BPS bound as literally giving you the lowest energy states within each sector. Okay, so as I said earlier, that the low energy dynamics is encoded in this thing called Sabre-Witten curve. So we could look at an example of such things. For example, if I look at this Fording equals two theory called pure SU2 super young males, which is given by vector multiplets, literally in the adjoint representation of SU2, and then the Sabre-Witten curve could be written explicitly as the following form, where I'll first explain the parameter and then tell you the structure of the curve. So here, lambda is a so-called strong scale of the SU2, and U is some parameter which tells you where you are on the Coulomb branch. because the Stapler-Whitten curve will change when you move around in the Coulomb branch. And this curve is also equipped with some a Stapler-Whitten differential, which I wrote here. So what's the structure of this curve? As you could say, this x, so it, you could write it as x squared is equal to something. So this curve has the structure of being a double cover on a sphere. And here I draw some, I didn't draw a picture here, I borrowed some nice picture drawn in Yuji Tachikawa's book called N equals to Supersymmetric Dynamics for Pedestrians. If you're interested, it's quite an interesting read and also collects many useful facts about N equals two theories. So this base will be a sphere, and then the two-fold covering will have four branch points labeled by these black dots. So you have z equals zero, and then two generic values of z depending on the parameters of the curve, and also z equals infinity. Moreover, your Stapler-Whitten differential will have poles at z equals zero and z equals infinity. So this curve, right now, it's drawn on the base, but you could really imagine it to be a two-fold covering of such a sphere by visualizing like the branch cuts are given by these dotted lines. So you would, for example, change sheet when you go across this branch cut. Once you have this curve, there are lots of physical quantities you could relate to with these properties or quantities relevant to this curve. For example, we were talking about this infrared, electromagnetic, and potentially flavor charge, which is gamma here. The gamma geometrically will be represented by one cycles on this curve. So for example, in this example given by Yuji, he draw this, for example, the A cycle and also the B cycle. Note that the B cycle really travels between the two sheets because you cross the cuts and then cross it back here. And then what's the physical meaning of these two cycles? So it corresponds to your choice of a purely electric charge and a purely magnetic charge. And we given this central charge formula, so this NE here will be electric charge, this NM here will be magnetic charge. So if we could compute, for example, this A and A dual here, then we could get a grip of what are the central charges for a generic state with charge gamma. So how do you get this A and A dual, this electric magnetic periods? What you do is you integrate this Stapler-Whitten differential along these chosen cycles here. So the A of the electric period will be given by integral lambda along the A cycle, and the dual period or magnetic period will be given by integral along the B cycle. And then once you've done this, then given any charge, you could write down its central charge. And moreover, there's another physical info encoded by this curve. Namely, so at the generic point on the Coulomb branch, you get this U1 theory. You could ask, what's its gauge coupling? And the gauge coupling is given by this tau, which I denoted tau here, is given by the partial derivative of a dual with respect to A. And as you vary the Coulomb branch parameter, your curve will change. And then the structure of the branching, et cetera, also changes. And then you get this collection of curves when you fibered over your Coulomb branch. OK, so are there any questions at this point? OK, so now let me special. Yeah.
Could you explain how you get such a curve from like the action, or that's like a long?
That's a long story, but I will explain a little bit how to sort of like write down the curve by hand in class S series.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, but you can read the original paper of Stapler-Whitten. There are two papers actually, so they explain like what's this origin story. Yeah, but I won't have time. Sorry about that. I can tell you more later if you want to know more. So far what I said is just applies for any 4D equals two series. But to get this more nice, rich geometric structure, I would need to restrict to this particular class of series called 4D equals two series of class S. So let me first define, or it's not a definition in math sense, but let me just briefly say how do you construct this kind of series. So class S series, which I denote as TGC here, which I believe in the math community are also denoted as theory. They are obtained by twisted compactification of a 62,0 theory labeled by the algebra ADE type on a Riemann surface. So your 60 theory will be, the 60 space-time you're considering will be some Riemann surface, which I draw schematically here, times the 4D space-time. Moreover, you would do some partial topological twisting along the Riemann surface, which effectively identifying SO2R symmetry, which is a subgroup of the subalgebra of the SO5R symmetry in the 60 theory, with the SO holonomy algebra of the Riemann surface to preserve supersymmetry. And then after you compactify on C, you will get some 4D theory with 8 supercharges. And because you have a 60 origin, and that's somehow called class S, where S means 6. In this story, there's a lot of rich structures which could be explored by, and also which is necessary to actually study the series, where because the Riemann surface will be equipped with decorations, namely punctures or twist lines. So I draw those dots here. I'll explain what they mean. So punctures from the 60 point of view will be codimension 2 defects. So namely, they span the whole 4D space-time, but they sit at a point on the Riemann surface. And then twist lines, I guess in the more modern language, please correct me if I'm wrong, will be correspond to a support from the 60 sense, support of the codimension 1, zero form symmetry defect, corresponding to the zero form symmetry associated with this automorphism of this whatever Lie algebra you're considering here. So because it's codimension 1, so it's going to be some sort of twist lines along the Riemann surface. And of course, you could also, these kind of twist lines have two options. Roughly speaking, they could end on some punctures where when you do a loop around the puncture, you will pick up this action of this zero form symmetry. Or it could be just wrap some one cycles on the Riemann surface. So there's a lot of structures there. But today, I will just not consider these twist lines. And I will restrict to the type A1 series, where there's only one kind of regular puncture. But there could also be regular punctures, but I don't think I'll talk about details of that. OK, so that's the definition of class S series. Then you could ask, I was talking about the Coulomb branch of Ferdinand-Gauss 2 series. Given this geometric construction of class S series, what is its Coulomb branch? So the Coulomb branch for class S series could be obtained by dimensional reduction of the tensor branch of the 60 theory. So very roughly speaking, the operators in the 60, which you give YF to go to the tensor branch, they're charged under the SO2R symmetry. After the twist, they will become K differentials on the Riemann surface. I guess I should say DK differentials based on my notation here. And they're meromorphic, so they could have different poles at the locations of the punctures here, and with some constraints that could be quite complicated. But generically, you could think of them as namely sections of this canonical bundle to the tensor DK power. And then geometrically, the Sapir-Whitten curve will be a branch covering of the Riemann surface C, which you use to construct this Ferdinand equals to class S series. And this covering will be embedded into the cotangent bundle of C. So let me give you an example. So we're just going to revisit this Ferdinand equals to pure SU2 super young Mills. And I already written down a curve like maybe two slides earlier. So now I'm just going to do some stupid rewriting and write it differently in this way. So first of all, if I want to construct this thing from class S, I should give you data, like what do you use for this Riemann surface. I already fixed the 60, 2,0 theory to be A1 type. So this Riemann surface relevant here will be CP1 with two irregular punctures. And I will say a little bit more about what do I mean by irregular in a moment. And then this curve, after you rewrite it a little bit, it's written down as following, which looks very simple. So lambda squared minus phi 2z equals to 0, where phi 2 is a quadratic differential, the quadratic differential on this CP1 with two irregular punctures. Namely, if you look at the structure of this quadratic differential, it has pole at z equals 0. And the notion of irregular just means the order of the poles is higher than 2 here. And if you do a coordinate transform and then check what's the behavior at z equals infinity, it also has a irregular puncture at z equals infinity. And then the separate written differential here, lambda, could just be written as ydz. And then let's check here. So the Coulomb branch has that, like, it's labeled by these mirrorific differentials. So in this case, the Coulomb branch is specified by this quadratic differential, or equivalently specified by this U parameter here, which we, as we said earlier, determine which point you are at the Coulomb branch. And then we also said that the separate written curve for class S theory could be embedded into the cotangent bundle of the Riemann surface. So explicitly, if you write lambda like in this local coordinate system as ydz, and this y would be the fiber coordinate of the cotangent bundle C. Are there any questions at this point? All right. So let me start saying, trying to make relations to Hitchin systems. I think I'm going a little slow here, but I can skip things later. So how do you relate to Hitchin systems? From the physics side, what you do is you further compactify your 4D theory, circle, and then the low energy effective theory is given by a 3D equals 4 sigma model with a target space. You could ask, what is this target space? And turns out that this target space is identified with the moduli space of solutions to Hitchin's equations. And the physics motivation or derivation for getting here is what you could do is you could go back to 6D and then change your order of compactification on the Riemann surface across this circle. You can do that thanks to this topological twisting along C, after which the theory will not be sensitive to the conformal scale of the metric on the Riemann surface. Now, if you switch the compactification order, first go from 6D to 5D, what you get is a 5D n equals 2 super young Mills. And let me, so here I have this group G, which is like a global form of the Lie algebra G here. So concretely, what kind of global form you get, again, has something to do with the choice along this circle. And here, and also for next Monday's talk, I will just fix G to be type A, and this global form of group G will be, say, SUN. But you can get more different things if you, for example, put this co-dimension 1 defect at the point on this S1 circle for the zero-form automorphism symmetry. OK, so you get 5D equals 2 super young Mills, and then this twisted compactification on C, one could ask, like, after you do this, what are the Poincaré invariant supersymmetric vacua? Which is by Poincaré invariant, I meant the Poincaré invariant in the leftover 3D spacetime. And such vacua will be described by certain differential equations relevant to fields on the Riemann surface C, which I wrote here. This is the celebrated Hitchin's equations, where here A corresponds to a G connection in this G bundle, which I denoted V over C. And then this phi here is the so-called Higgs field. Thanks to the twisting, it will become a 1,0 form valued in NV. Now, in this Hitchin system picture, there will be, I'll just like trying to make a map between the terminologies in Hitchin system and terminologies in 4D equals 2. For example, the separate written curve that we've been talking about will correspond to the so-called spectral curve of the Hitchin system, which could be understood as the characteristic polynomial of the Higgs field. And on the other hand, the 4D Coulomb branch will correspond to the so-called Hitchin base. And I'll talk a little more about this in the next slides. So if you, you have encountered Hitchin systems or other kind of hyperkähler stuff, you know that the Hitchin system will have not just one complex structure, but a full CP1 worth of complex structures. And then these different complex structures will tell you, will or encode different structures of this module space or Hitchin systems. So for example, if we look at the situation where Zeta, which labels this full CP1 Wersal complex structure, if we look at the situation where Zeta equals zero, or equivalently Zeta equals to infinity, this modular space of solutions to Hitchin's equation could be understood as a modular space of Higgs bundles, which you could think about it as some complex integrable system fibered over the Hitchin base, or physically the Coulomb branch, where the generic fibers are compact tori. In the physical sense, you could think of this generic fiber tori as a choice of the choice of your electric and magnetic lines wrapped around this S1 circle when you do this 4D to 3D thing. And here I also write down explicitly, for example, what does this spectral curve look like? And then one could ask, what about at other complex structures? For example, if Zeta is any generic, say, star parameter, then the Hitchin's equations will indicate the flatness of the following complex connections. What is this complex connections? It's given by this expression where R is the radius of this this 4D to, so you're physically considering 4D to as 3D across a circle, R is the radius of the circle. Zeta labels your complex structure. Phi is a Higgs field, and A corresponds to the connection in this, in this Hitchin's equation. So the statement that Hitchin's equation will imply this complex connection is flat. In this sense, the modular space of solutions to Hitchin's equations could be understood as a modular space of flat GC connections on C. As such, you could ask, okay, so we have a modular space of flat GC connections. You could ask, what are the possible holomorphic functions on this modular space? And to answer this question, we would on the physics side, we would need to understand better some extended objects in the 4D equals 2 class S series. So that will bring us to the topic of land effects in 4D equals 2 series. But before that, are there any questions so far? Okay. So how do you construct land effects in class S series? So again, since everything we said so far all have a 6D origin, so let's go back to 6D and think about what do I do in 6D to produce the land effects in 4 dimensions. So so that's lots of words, but I would like you to just look at this picture for the moment. So recall that your 6D spacetime is Riemann surface crosses 4D spacetime. Now I could pick a 2-dimensional surface defect in 6D and wrap it along some 1-dimensional path, for example, this cycle here on the Riemann surface. And then the other dimension, I'll extend it along the time direction. If you do so, after you compact fail on Riemann surface C, this 6D surface defect will descend to a land defect in 4D on class S series. So this would be the picture in the most simple case. But generically, this land effects could depend on, strictly speaking, it depends on more data, which I will just briefly mention here. So first of all, the land effects throughout the talk, I'll use this symbol, SVBL. And then it depends on actually 3 pieces of data, but sometimes I make this simplification and omit some other data. But let's first say, like, what are all the data that this land effect could depend on? First of all, there's a C star parameter. As we mentioned earlier, to motivate this thing, we were saying we try to find holomorphic functions on this modular space of flat connections, and this Zeta here correspond to the complex structure. And physically, this corresponds to a choice of the preserved supercharges of this land effect. And then it also has this data depending on this mass frac P here. This P here will be some one-dimensional path on the Riemann surface. So for example, this little blue loop here. And this dependence on P will only up to homotopy, thanks to the twist you did on the Riemann surface C. And moreover, these land effects will also be associated with some representation of the Lie algebra G corresponding to your 6D theory. And that is because the surface defect in 6D is going to be labeled by representations of G. So as we said, in the simplest case, where is also what we're going to be restricting to, where the Lie algebra is A1, and also suppose C only has this thing called regular punctures, namely it doesn't the quadratic differentials or the Higgs field does not have higher poles at the punctures. In that case, this one-dimensional pass P will just be some non-self-intersecting closed curve on the Riemann surface, exactly like something like you draw here. However, there could be more generic cases. For example, even in the A1 theory case, namely, I still consider 6D 2.0 A1 theory. However, I allow my Riemann surface to carry regular punctures. Then this one-dimensional pass could correspond to something called integral laminations, which is essentially a collection of open paths where the open paths sort of end on some marked points corresponding to the so-called Stokes directions at the irregular punctures. So I don't have time to describe the details of it. If you want to know more about it, I could tell you more after the talk. And in general, if I consider more generic 6D series, for example, higher type A series, then this one-dimensional path could also contain this sort of objects called junctions, which I draw as this blue square here. So what are these junctions? Basically, these junctions could piece together paths carrying different representations. And there will be some sort of G-invariant tensor associated with junction, which picks up some G-invariant thing when you take the tensor product of the different representations that that connect it to this junction. So the path P here could be more complicated. For example, you could have these two junctions here connecting three different representations, and they're connected to each other like that. So that's about the land effects in class S series. So I talked about these more generic situations. However, you only need to remember for now that the land effects in class S come from 6D surface defect, and they correspond to some one cycles on the Riemann surface C. Okay, so let's I said we motivated this land effects in this talk after talking about Hitchin systems. So let me just make this statement more precise. So what are the relations between land effects and Hitchin systems? So what you could recall that to get Hitchin system, we're considering the 4D theory on the 3D cross a circle with the radius R. And what I could do is to wrap this land effects along this circle. And then upon the circle quantification, the wave of this line are going to become holomorphic functions on this modular space of flat GC connections. And exactly in what complex structure is determined by what kind of supercharges does this line preserve. And moreover, you could actually write down this holomorphic function rather explicitly. Like for example, again, in this most simple case where the land effects literally correspond to some one cycles on C, and you could write this this VAF as trace or holonomy of these complex connections that we showed earlier when we talked about Hitchin systems. So in this sense, the VAF of the line wrapping the circle become the so-called trace functions on this modular space of flat connections. Now, in general, you could you would do something more complicated. You compute, for example, in the junction case, you would compute parallel transport along different paths and then contract with this G-invariant tensor associated with the junctions. Okay, so are there any questions so far? Okay, so we spent some time talking about Coulomb branch of the 4D theory. So one question one could ask is, suppose I have a 4D equals to class S series, I have a land effect in it, and then I want to deform to a point on the Coulomb branch. And then if I follow the defect into the infrared, I could ask, what does this defect become? So even if you start with a single simple land effect in the UV, after you go to this point on the Coulomb branch, generically, the infrared limit of this land effect will be a superposition of supersymmetric land effects in the infrared effective Abelian theory. And the superposition will have some integer coefficient, which physically corresponding to the so-called frame BPS indices. And the statement could be packaged into the so-called UVLR map, which I wrote here. So on the left-hand side, you say this UV land effect, which I told you all the data this land effect depends on. And then I'm being lazy here. I omitted lots of them, except to keep track of what kind of supercharges they are preserving. So on the left-hand side, you have UV's line defect. And this arrow here corresponds to deform to a point on the Coulomb branch. And then you will get a superposition of infrared lines with these integer coefficients, these BPS frame BPS indices. And this infrared line, which are denoted using the symbol X gamma here, namely, they represent the infrared dionic lines with charge gamma. I'll recall that at generic point on the Coulomb branch, you get this abelian theory where you could have generic dionic lines with infrared charge gamma. And those dionic lines are labeled by using this formal symbol X gamma here. So we earlier we talked about geometrical correspondence for this UV line defects. You could ask, is there any geometric correspondence for this infrared line defects? And the answer would be yes. So first, recall that a point U on the Coulomb branch corresponds to a branch covering C tilde over C, which I schematically draw here. And this C tilde is a so-called spectral curve in the Hitchin system language, or cyber-written curve in 4D equals 2 language. And recall that geometrically, the UV line defects correspond to some one-dimensional paths, for example, some one cycles on C. And then geometrically, similarly speaking, the infrared line defects will correspond to loops denoted as P tilde upstairs on the branch covering C tilde, where the corresponding loop will have a class on whatever, for example, I said that these infrared line defects on X gamma correspond to the infrared dionic lines with some charge gamma. And this charge gamma will be the homology class corresponding to the uplifted loop on the cyber-written curve C tilde. So in this geometric sense, this UV to IR map that I mentioned earlier for line defects could be understood as a way to uplift some one cycles downstairs on C to combinations of loops upstairs in this covering C tilde. And this geometrical way to compute this UVIR map was worked out under the name of, for example, spectral networks by Gail Tomoranetsky. So in the problem session, I give you, maybe I should say, like, this kind of geometric procedure, it's nice, and you have two options to actually compute these things. You could draw a bunch of things and then do it by hand, which could be fun for a while. Or you could use computers, like you could use mathematical or Python, whatever you want, and then to compute such things. And I don't want to assume like you have to use a computer or any software for the problem session. So what I did is I gave you an example in the problem session, and I want you to use the result to do something else. So which makes the problem might be a little lame in that sense, but if you want to know like more about how this computation actually goes, I could tell you more about that. But let me just briefly mention this another example, which is different from the example I gave in the problem session. Namely, if I look at this 4D equals 2 series, which is called SU2 gauge theory, with four hypermultiplets in the fundamental representation, and it has a class S construction, the corresponding Riemann surface C will be a four-puncture sphere, which I, unfortunately, this figure is a little bit too messy, but I only want you to notice this little blue dot here. So those represent the four punctures. And this, suppose I go to a point on the Coulomb branch, and I should be honest that I also turned on mass parameters here, but generically, this will be point on the so-called strong coupling region in this SU2 with four fundamental hyper theory. And then the cyber-written curve I wrote explicitly here. It's going to be a double covering, again, on this Riemann surface C, which is a four-puncture sphere, and with four branch points, which I labeled in orange cross. So that's a theory. And now I would like to consider a UV line defect, namely a line defect defined in the 4D equals 2 SU2 with four fundamental hyper theory, which geometrically correspond to this little blue loop here, which I labeled by K. So it just loops around two out of the four blue punctures. And if I could ask, like, what's the corresponding infrared decomposition of this UV line defects? If you go through the calculation, you will find seven infrared line defects, with various infrared charges, gamma, where I rotate this way after picking some particular basis for my homology, first homology of the cyber-return curve. Okay, so let me also mention what, actually, are there any questions at this point? Yeah. No, I didn't, because then the picture will be totally unreadable. But I can point you to where they, like what they would look like. Yeah. Okay, so we've been talking, are there any other questions I should ask? Okay, so we'll be going back and forth between 4D equals 2 and Hitchin system, so let's also do it here. What are, we said that the UV line defects on the Hitchin system side correspond to holomorphic functions on this realization on Hitchin system as module space of like GC connections. You could ask what are these infrared line defects. Infrared line defects are also have some sort of similar meaning, but quite different from UV lines. Namely, you could also consider the web of the infrared line wrapping this circle here. And then this web, I will denote as chi gamma for a line X gamma with charge gamma. And this chi gamma here are going to be local Dabu coordinates on the moduli space of flat GC connections. So instead of global functions, as what the UV line defects are, for infrared lines, you get actually get local Dabu coordinates on this moduli space of flat connections. And this local Dabu coordinates have distinguished asymptotic behavior, which I will not talk about in this part, but I might mention a little bit on this talk. So namely, as this theta here goes to zero or infinity, when this local Dabu coordinates has some asymptotic behavior, which from the physical side could be determined by literally considering, for example, putting 4D equals to U1 theory on 3D across a circle. And however, this picture cannot be right, because we mentioned way earlier in the talk that there exists this thing called BPS states at a generic point on the module space Coulomb branch, which will be massive, and they will give corrections to these Dabu coordinates. And the corrections comes in form of these discontinuities. So these Dabu coordinates will have discontinuities across the so-called BPS walls. And this, the jumps as you go through the discontinuities are controlled by Kontsevich Stoiberman simplex homomorphisms. And because of this kind of distinguished analytical behavior, namely the asymptotics and the jumps, you can formulate chi gamma as solutions to a Riemann-Hilbert problem. And I will perhaps say a little more about this in Monday's talk. Okay, so I'm almost done with the lines, let's say I've introduced UV line defects and then correspond to the homomorphic functions on Hitchin system, and infrared lines correspond to double coordinates system in the Hitchin system language. And we were also talking about this UV error map. We could ask, what does it mean on the Hitchin system side? So let me just repeat here, sorry. On the UV, this UV line web wrapped around circle correspond to holomorphic trace functions on the module space of flat GC connections. In the infrared, you get this Dabu coordinates. So if you literally look at this UV to IR map and then just take the web on both sides, what this gives you is then a so-called trace map, which gives you an expansion of the trace function, which is a trace of the holonomial of this complex GC connection in terms of this local Dabu coordinates with this integer coefficient. So at this point, you could ask, like, I was told you that this web of UV line is the only to God holomorphic function on this module space of like GC connections. On the other hand, these chi gammas, they're not global functions. They're just local Dabu coordinates. Then you could say, like, how does this even make sense? Because, you know, on the left-hand side, you have something global defined. On the other side, you just have local coordinates. And the resolution to this seemingly contradiction is given by this so-called wall-crossing behavior by these integers. So these integers will not be some constant. They're only piecewise constant. As you vary the parameters, they will jump exactly at the places where the chi gamma would jump. And these two jumps of this this thing is called frame BP, framed wall crossing, but we're not going to talk about that. The jump on this omega side and the jump on the chi gamma side exactly work out such that the thing on the left-hand side is indeed a globally defined function on the modular space of like GC connections. Okay, so before I move on, maybe I should ask, are there any questions at this point? Okay, so before I talk about something completely different, let me just mention one more thing for land effects. Namely, okay, so we were talking about Hitchin systems and land effects correspond to holomorphic functions. There's a really simple and naive algebra structure on the space of holomorphic functions, namely just taking the product of the two functions. You could ask what is the physical meaning of that algebra? And that physical meaning is given by the so-called land effects OPE. So the land effects are one-dimensional. They're extending along time direction. They're inserted at a point in the 3D space. So you could imagine the limit where you have two lines and then bring them together. Generically in physics, this limit will be singular. However, here, thanks to supersymmetry, after you pass to Q homology, where Q are the preserved supercharges by these parallel lines, then you will get something, some another line defects, which are denoted as product of L1 and L2. And if you take the web of this L1 times L2, this product line, the web is equal to, it's going to be just match this naive algebra structure on the space of holomorphic functions, namely the product of the web of the separate two lines. Now, this algebra structure in the context that I just told you, you could realize that it's a commutative algebra for the reason that suppose I have two lines, it's a blue and green dot. I could let the blue line approach the green dot here, or I could just bring it over and then approach the green line from the other side or any other directions. There isn't a fixed direction where this OPE has to be restricted to. And next time, I will talk about, by next time I mean next Monday, I will talk about how this algebra structure will admit some sort of non-commutative deformation in terms of the so-called skin algebras. And also, we said that the UVIR decomposition of land effects indicates something called a trace map on the Hitchin system side. Under this kind of deformation, this trace map will also admit a quantization. And that's where you can make connections with skin theory and link invariants and other things. Okay, so let me make an intermediate summary. What we've said so far, or first I'll give you, I hope, not too bad introduction to 40 equals 2 class S series and also the structure of the Coulomb branch, and also mentioned the relations to Hitchin systems and the consideration from the Hitchin system also motivates you, at least that's when we are thinking of it, it motivates you to think about extended land effects in class S series. And I also told you about this UVIR map, namely how does this UV line look like in the infrared effective theory, and also the corresponding trace map on the Hitchin system side. Okay, so are there any questions up so far?
Do you know if the quantization of this algebra of line operators comes from topological descent in some sense? So you have this, like, in three dimensions, you have this this bracket coming from topological descent, and you can quantize this with a mega background. Do you know if the analogous story holds in this line operator story?
I think perhaps this. There's some work by, I think that's true. Yeah, Tudor, sorry.
So yeah, if I can say a thing. These algebras are all effectively three-dimensional. They're coming from a 4D theory on a circle. And so effectively you're just dealing with local operators in a 3D theory, and the same structures should arise. But you could also ask, how things lift to 4D, and then you're dealing with a category. And Cowdes and Williams described sort of the analog of what non-commutativity should mean there.
Yeah.
Or can I just remember, the answer to that question is that these line defects, so far as we're considering them, they form an E3 algebra, which if we're just thinking of it as like a classical algebra, then it's commutative.
Right. So hopefully I will say a little more about this quantization next week.
And Tudor's answer was that Cowdes Williams' story describes an E3 category. Is that right? I mean,
no. It's partially holomorphic.
Holomorphic. So it's like a chiral.
So in 4D, we've got a holomorphic topological twist, and the lines are in the topological direction, and they're sitting at points in the holomorphic direction. And as long as they're at different points, then you can move them past each other.
So it's sort of a chiral E1 category or something.
Exactly.
And wait, this is like you said E3 here. We've twisted. We've done a further twist. We've compactified the chiral, but we've compactified on a circle.
Let me try to address that in discussions.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, I didn't mean to derail anything.
Oh no, it's good. Thanks. We can talk more about this in the discussion section.
Cool. Thanks.
Thanks. Okay. So I think I have like 35 minutes left. But you're perhaps hungry for lunch, so I'll see what I can do to tell you the rest of the story. So the rest of the story will have a completely different flavor than what I've been telling you so far. So I talked about 4D equals to class set series and talk about land effects. And you could ask what are other extended objects you could consider. For example, one can consider this thing called surface defects in class set series. And again, we're going back to the 6D construction. So recall you have a Riemann surface, you have 4D space-time. And now I'm still going to take a two-dimensional surface defect in 6D, but I'm going to orient it. I'm going to position the surface defect differently now. So namely, the two-dimensional surface defect will be extending along the two dimensions in the 4D space-time, and it's going to sit at a point on the Riemann surface. And doing this so, this surface defect sometimes also causes a canonical surface defect. It preserves a 2D 2,2 supersymmetry inside the 4D equals 2 SUSY algebra. And here, this point on the Riemann surface, I denote it as Z here. In this geometric picture, in the 6D picture, it corresponds to like this transverse position of where you put the surface defect. However, it also has an intrinsic meaning for the theory living on the surface defect. For example, if your 2D 2,2 theory on the surface defect admits a description in terms of gauge linear sigma model, then this Z here will correspond to the FI parameter in this GLSM. Okay, so now we're going to just go back to our old roads. Namely, we could ask, what happens at a generic point on the Coulomb branch? If we deform into a Coulomb branch of this 4D equals 2 theory, as we said, the four-dimensional bulk is described by some effective Abelian theory. And the surface defect, on the other hand, will develop a set of massive vacua. And this massive vacua will be fibered over this Riemann surface C to form a total space of vacua. And the exactly which vacua you are at is going to be given by a VAF, or this twisted chiral ring operator, of this surface defect. And then you could ask, so wait a minute, this sounds a little bit like what we talked about earlier, namely the separate return curve, where you have this fibering of C tilde over the Riemann surface C. And that's exactly what's given by the surface defect story here, namely the vacuum structure for the surface effect encodes the Bach Seibel return geometry. And more concretely, the Seibel return curve is exactly given by the twisted chiral ring relation of the surface defect theory. So, so what does this tell you? Like, how can you use this fact to do something like related to some mathematical problems? And the answer is again, yes, here. So for lines, lots of the stories there are related to Hitchin systems or skin algebras. In here, for the surface defects, one way to think about like an application of this kind of correspondence is think about to use this in this topics of so-called quantum separated curves. So what do I mean by quantum separated curve? Let's consider a separated curve of some rank 1 for the Nkosu theory, like some SU2 theory. So I just simply write it in this way as a curve like x squared plus some potential p depending on z equal to 0. So this is going to be a double covering or something parameterized by z. Now, if I think of this x as my momentum coordinate and z as my position coordinate, and promote these two coordinates to Heisenberg operators, and if I write this curve in the position representation, one would get a second-order differential equation in this following way. So it looks like a Schrodinger equation. And of course, you say this procedure seems pretty arbitrary, because if I'm given a curve, I could do like I could get many, many different Schrodinger equations, which in the classical limit reduces to me the same separated curve. So namely, there could be like non-trivial h-bar dependence here in this potential here, which will just go away when you go when you go back to this classical curve. And then you could ask, like, what's the point of doing this? Like, is there a particular choice or quantization which is picked up by physics in some sense? And the answer is yes. And this choice, this way of picking up this choice could be understood in different ways. So one way to think about this is turning on the Nekrasov-Shatashvili limit of the omega background along the surface defect. And I will I won't have time to explain. Also, I personally do not know all the details of this procedure. But if you ask me later, I could sort of like describe to you how this works. But what it happens, it will doing this will give you sort of like a canonical way to quantize this separated curve into a Schrodinger equation. And you can also think about these kind of things in higher order analogs. So for example, if you change the 2 to 3 or something else, and there will also be a corresponding quantization procedure. And since we have spent so much time talking about Hitchin systems, let me also mention that there's another way to obtain this canonical quantization, namely to use the so-called conformal limit, thanks to a work by Davide Gaiotto. So you can take this so-called conformal limit of the Hitchin modulus space very carefully, and that will also give you this kind of Schrodinger equation. In that context, what's relevant there is like I didn't mention, but in this zeta equals to zero complex structure of the Hitchin modulus space, where it's realized as this complex integrable system, there's a distinguished section of this complex integrable system, which is called the Hitchin section. So namely, you're considering like a section through all the compact toroid, which physically, in a way, you could think about like turning off your choice of these electric magnetic lines along the circle. And then the conformal limit will quantize this Hitchin section into the variety of opers, which you can write in local form in terms of these Schrodinger equations. Another way to go through this this quantization procedure is through this AGT correspondence, which also have quite some history. There, this psi here corresponds to insertion of some degenerate field, where this equation could be derived as some null relation inside this degenerate module. Okay, so we talked about that surface defect has something to do with quantization of this separated curve, and now. What I'm going to do the next is going to just give you a very brief introduction to how to construct exact solutions to the Schrodinger equation and what are the roles that surface defect played there. That brings us to the topic of exact WKB for Schrodinger equations. So we're all familiar with the WKB method for when we learn quantum mechanics. So what happens is you could make this WKB on that psi, write as e to the 1 over h bar integral lambda. And if you substitute this on that to the Schrodinger equation, you will realize that which you will practice very soon in the problem session, that the lambda has to obey the so-called Riccati equation. I'm sorry there's a typo here. It's double C here, but one T. Sorry about that. I'll correct it. OK, so lambda obeys the Riccati equation. So then what you could do is, first of all, you could try to build a formal series solution, lambda formal, literally in terms of powers of h bar, and then just substitute your formal series on that into the Riccati equation. And then at order h bar to the 0, you just get back to something like lambda 0's order term square plus pz equal to 0. And this is exactly your classical separate return curve. And then as you will work out in the problem session, you will see that one, here you have two choices associated with two choices of the square root branch cut. Once you make a choice at the zeros order, all the higher order terms will be uniquely fixed. So in the end, what you have is our two formal solutions, lambda formal to the Riccati equation. And then if you substitute these formal solutions back to the WKB on that, that gives you two formal solutions to this Schrodinger equation. So what do I mean by saying formal? Like, I've been using this word so long. It's because here, you just literally, how you solved it is just you literally built this series expansion in h-bar. And then what you get is also series expansion in h-bar. And as you will see in the problem session, in this simplest example, the coefficients in this expansion at nth order in h-bar diverges as n factorial. So this whole thing, this series expansion, is an asymptotic series. It's not an actual function in h-bar. Of course, you could say, OK, so numerically, maybe we could truncate it to some order and then get some numbers. But as an asymptotic series, you know that there has to be an optimal order for you to do this truncation. Otherwise, you're going to get way off answers. So one has to somehow come up a way to resum this asymptotic series. And one way to do so is the so-called Borrari summation. So I wrote down the definition and what to do for the Borrari summation in the problem session part. But roughly speaking, what you do here is you take this formal series in h-bar. You divide each coefficient by n factorial. So you divide this n factorial dependence out. And then you do a Laplace transform of the, after you divide the n factorial per coefficient, you get the this thing called Borrari transform. And then the Borrari summation is given by the Laplace transformation of the Borrari transform. And in particular, it's going to be given by integral of the Borrari transform along some trajectory, along some contour. And of course, if the Borrari transform has some poles along your integration contour, then you're in trouble. So in that case, this formal series is not Borrari summable. So in particular, you could ask, is this formal solution always Borrari summable for all values of z here? Suppose you're considering this complex plane z. And the answer is definitely no. And you will see that also in the problem session for the simplest example. But let me just tell you like what's the generic expected picture here. So first of all, we have this at order h bar to 0. We have this classical separate return curve. And in particular, this curve will have branch point, so which I label here in the orange crosses. So from starting from each branch point, there will be three trajectories going out. So for example, from here, you get 3. And from this branch point, you also get 3. And locally, they look like this three-pronged thing. And globally, these trajectories are going to be attracted to some punctures on Riemann surface. Here, you're imagining I have some singularities at infinity, like here, 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 here. Or you could form some random mean, which I will show an example of the random mean in the next few slides. And what's the meaning of these trajectories? So as you could see from this problem session, these trajectories are exactly the values of z for which these formal solutions, psi formal plus minus z, one of them is not Borrari summable. So in other words, if I take these trajectories, they cover up the whole complex plane into different areas, so I call it A, B, C, D, E. Within each region, I could safely do this Borrari summation business and produce two actual solutions, psi plus minus, to the Schrodinger equation. However, exactly at those trajectories, one of the solutions, generically speaking, one of the solutions will not be bra-summable. So there will be a jump. So I don't have time to talk about these details, but when something is not bra-summable, you have the choice of deforming your integration contour a little bit, either below the singularity or above the singularity. And these two choices will give you different things. So there will be some associated Stokes phenomena to this. And this is exactly what happens when you cross this kind of locus where one of the solutions is not bra-summable. And the jump is taking some particular way. For example, in this region D, I have two actual solutions called psi plus psi minus. And on the region E, I will have another two form actual solutions given by Brouwer summation of the formal solutions. I'll call it psi plus minus E. And going from D to E, they jump by this upper triangular matrix. And if you, this is sort of like a generic global picture. In the problem session, I invite you to explore this kind of behavior for the area equation, which is like the potential is just z. And this area equation is exactly what happens when you sort of like zoom in to the neighborhood of this branch point. And hopefully after the problem session, you will see the structure of these three pronged Stokes curves coming out of the branch point. And I should say that, based on this kind of not, I don't mean to say old, but based on the work by Kawai and Taki, they had some sort of transform theory which sort of like relate a more generic potential to what happens with the area equation where you could do everything explicitly, in particular the Brouwer transform, based on hypergeometric function. So they're literally written by hypergeometric functions. Sorry, Brouwer transform based on hypergeometric equation. And then you could get the solution. And then this kind of jumping behavior is given explicitly using some connection formula for hypergeometric functions. So all that you could read from this a couple of, I guess it appeared in like original work and also some reviews and some other works, but I can give you reference if you're interested. Okay, where did surface defect go? Like I was talking about surface defect and somehow I just started talking about this and what's the connection? The connection is the following. So this kind of locus, which I guess I didn't call it Stokes curve, but they're denoted as Stokes curves. And the Stokes curves are exactly determined by the soliton spectrum of the surface defect. So if you look at the condition for drawing the Stokes curves, which was worked out in the, for example, the community which studies the exact WKB for Schrodinger equations, it's exactly the same condition for example, existence of solitons for the canonical surface defect corresponding to this particular choice of central charge phase. So there is this really interesting connection here. And let me just say that, of course, this soliton spectrum of surface defects or this kind of trajectory story by Galtor and Moronetsky is very generically extendable to higher rank class S series or correspondingly to higher order ordinary differential equations. But however, on the differential equation side, this analysis of Kawai-Take, as far as I know, there isn't such a correspondence, like a study of the Brouwer summability for higher order ODEs yet. But however, you could try to check some like numerically or like in some examples, and you do find that indeed the soliton spectrum of surface defect still determines the places where the Brouwer sum determines where this formal solutions whether or not it's Brouwer summable. And okay, so maybe I'll just take 10 more minutes. Sorry, are there any questions at this point? Okay. One of the objects that sort of like play some important role in this exact WKB business is the so-called Walras symbols. And I use chi gamma here, depending on h bar. It's some C-star valued variable, which are labeled by gamma, where gamma geometrically corresponds to one cycle of the cyber-written curve or this WKB curve in this ODE business. And I use the symbol chi here, not by coincidence, because in some sense, you could think of this chi gamma h bar as the descent from the chi gamma zeta, which we said has some meaning with web of infrared lines wrapped around a circle, by taking the conformal limit, which I didn't talk about. Okay, so the world symbol, having the connections to 14 equals 2 series, but they also already played an important role in the exact WKB business, like way before people were studying N equals 2 series, for example. Maybe way before is a little bit strong, but before people were interested in studying 14 equals 2 star. So for example, this world symbol carries a Borrowy sum quantity, which is a different quantity than the solution Schrodinger equation, but the quantity called WKB periods. Namely, you take your formal solution to the Riccati equation, where the zeroth order term is your Sabre-Whitten differential. And then you do this integral along this one cycle of the Sabre-Whitten curve. So of course, at h bar to the zeroth order, you just get the central charge. But then there are like all the other higher order terms. And again, this will be some asymptotic series with zero convergence radius. And you could, what you could do to do the Borrow transform to get a finite convergent radius. And then at generic phases, you could do the Borrowy summation business. And then at particular locus where the Borrow transform has singularities, you again have some Stokes phenomena. And that Stokes phenomenon, that Stokes behavior from the 14 equals 2 side are going to be determined by the BPS spectrum of your N equals 2 series at this point on the Coulomb branch corresponding to the Sabre-Whitten curve. And if I forget about this 14 equals 2 connection, just look at the world symbol. It usually it could be expressed as Wronskians of distinguished local solutions to this Schrodinger equation. And in particular, what kind of distinguished solutions? For example, you could have some asymptotic decaying solution as z, z is the coordinates on this z plane or position coordinate, whatever, as z approaches the singularity of your potential. On the other hand, this kind of distinguished local solution could also be eigenvectors of the monogamy when you go around a loop, when you loop around a singularity. And in that sense, this Borrow symbol somehow encodes exact quantization conditions for various spectral problems. So let me give you a simple example. This will be the last thing I talk about. In this example, the so-called modified Matthieu operator. So the corresponding Schrodinger equation looks like this. It's modified Matthieu because you have cosh here instead of cosine. You can also study Matthieu, but for this problem here, I'm looking at modified Matthieu. So this is my potential. And then moreover, I fix the energy to be in the range of E bigger than 1 in this case, so that it's possible to get a bound state or solution which decays as you go to infinity. That's what I meant by a bound state. Of course, you could ask, like, can I get such a thing for any value of E? Like, what's the condition of the energy for such bound states exist? So, of course, there are various ways to look at this problem, but I will describe this sort of geometric way to approach this problem, thanks to all these people and also many others who have been working on these kind of problems for a long time. So first I will do, to connect to 14 equals 2, first I will do a coordinate exchange like this, and then I will get I'll get the following second order differential equation. And that's exactly the so-called quantum Sabre-Whitten curve for pure SU2 super-young male theory. So namely, you can derive this kind of thing. As I said earlier, you could derive it from AGT, or you could derive it. I don't think people have actually done it using the conformal limit method, or you could derive it from the surface defect omega background surface defect partition function. So anyway, that's the quantum Sabre-Whitten curve. And now I could look at, as we said earlier, the Stokes curve will have this structure where there are three of them coming out of each branch point, and then globally they could either go to a singularity or loop around. And in this case, it's the case where the Stokes curves actually form some loop here. So for example, from this branch point, I have three, I have one, and these two loops back, and then here similarly. So I have this randoming. Okay, so now based on what we said, if you do you could construct, first of all, construct formal solutions for the Schrodinger equation, and then within each region, which is complement of this Stokes curve, you could do Brouwer summation and get two actual solutions to this modified Massieu equation. So for example, here you have two solutions, here you have two solutions, and then you also know, I didn't talk about like how Brouwer sum solutions actually related on both sides, but there is a concrete formula to do so. So you know the actual solutions at each complement. You also know how to connect them as you go across the Stokes curve. Then you get some global picture of like what are the actual exact solutions to the modified Massieu equation. But among all the solutions, there are two that are sort of special. So those are the examples of what I said, the distinguished local solutions. So first of all, one of the special solutions is a thing called S here. This is a solution which exponentially decays as z goes to infinity along the negative real axis. Another special solution, I denote as t here, it exponentially decays as z goes to zero, also along the negative real axis. Now, why do I mention these two? So recall that we started with asking this question, like at what energy do I get a bound state which decays as you go to infinity? So what does that mean in terms of these two special solutions? It means like if you have an analytical continuous special solution, S will be proportional to T. So in that sense, you will get a bound solution along this negative real axis, which after you map back to your original X coordinate will correspond to a bound solution along the whole real X axis. So we said earlier, I didn't give you examples, but this Wall symbols, it's expressed at the Wronskians of these distinguished local solutions. I didn't give you this expression here, but I can point you to what they look like. If you substitute this condition into your expression for Wall symbol, you will get this this identity, namely the Wall symbol associated with the cycle gamma 2, chi gamma 2 here is equal to 1. And this is often called the exact quantization condition for such a bound state. Why is that? It's because this chi gamma here will depend on the energy E. So in principle, what you could do is to invert this relation and then to get those values of the energy at which you would have this bound state. So that's like one example of applications of the Wall symbol. Are there any questions at this point? OK. So I talked about this exact WKV for the second order Schrodinger equation. Next Monday, I will just mention a little bit how this thing generalized, that, how these kind of things generalize to higher order ordinary differential equations using a simple third order differential equation as a test case. OK, so let me summarize by being lazy and copy my outlook slide. We were looking at 14 equals 2 class S series, and then there are different objects that you could consider, and land effect, surface effect, and they are connected to different areas in mathematics, like Hitching systems, skin theory, link invariance, and exact WKB. And next Monday, I will talk a little bit more on this connection to skin theory and link invariance, and also a little bit more on exact WKB method for higher order ODEs. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Faye. Are there any questions from the audience or on Zoom? I'll maybe throw a question just out there to think about. So, mm-hmm. So we've talked about twisted field theories and part of this conference, and it's still not 100% clear to me how to put in particular the things that the second part of your talk into that context.
Yeah. So exactly.
It maybe shouldn't be that mysterious, but it would be a nice thing to. to think about and try to fully connect.
Yeah, you're right. So the first part I'll talk is has to do with holomorphic twisting in the 4D equals 2 series, as you say, and it has a clear connection. But the second part, so one physical way to think about it is this omega background story, and I don't quite know how to fit that into. And also, I should say, I sort of said this surface effect stuff, but it's still, for example, this kind of soliton spectrum behavior. This branch point, for example, is not really visible in this surface effect partition function in the omega background story. It's so I think the first step is perhaps to explain this kind of things from there, and then try to fit the whole thing into a physical context. But that's just my speculation. Yeah. Thanks.
That would be nice. Any other thoughts or questions?
A very closely related question. So it's known, I don't know who figured this out, maybe Davide, that the sideway Newton curve can be understood as the moduli of a surface defect.
Yes. Yeah, it's...
Is there any similar, what about this kind of quantum, so-called quantum Cyber-Wooden curve? How do I think about that? Is there any way to think about that?
So maybe I could say, thanks for the question, maybe I could say something perhaps not very precise, but so as you said, Cyber-Wooden curve could be understood as this twisted Carrier-Ring relation for the surface defect theory. And then you could ask what this quantum Cyber-Wooden curve does. And I only briefly mentioned here, but there's this more recent work by Nikrosov, Savyuk Jung, who might be here remotely, and also other collaborators, which interpreted this kind of quantum Cyber-Wooden curve as some differential equations satisfied by the surface defect partition function in this omega background. So this wave function psi here could be understood as, I'm not saying it in the full precise way, but roughly speaking, this wave function here could be understood from partition function on the surface defect with this Nikrosov-Satishvili limit of omega background. And then this partition function in particular satisfies this kind of differential equation. So that's one physical way to think about this quantum Cyber-Wooden curve in the surface defect story. Although I think it's perhaps not so clear, it's a quantization or twisted Carrier-Ring relation or something, but I can't say it very precisely in that sense. Yeah.
So it seems like we do a twisted compactification, and I get an effect of quantum mechanics, which contains differential operators, and the boundary condition should be a D module given by that relation, something like that. Might be a kind of a more math way to restate what you just said.
I see. That could be the case, but I don't know. But yeah. Thanks.
I'll also say half of
the talks next week are also going to be more about these sort of recent investigations in 4D n equals 2 theories. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot.